the NFL podcast. Does team celebrations in the end zone.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a garage filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Right before we started, Dan said, well, what do I say again to start the podcast?
Well, we're in a bit of a different setting. We're in Dan's garage.
Did I say
garage.
My name at the top of the show?
Well, you should say it now, then.
I think so. I wasn't listening that closely.
I'm Dan Hansis.
Did I say that?
I think you covered yourself.
Dad, did I say that?
Have you done this before?
I really was listening, but I wasn't really listening.
Yeah. We're plugged in.
All right. Well, I am Dan Hansis, and this is the Around the NFL podcast. And we are in the garage after Monday Night Football. The Packers obviously embarrassed the Vikings, quite frankly, in their house to take the NFC North. And we are going to get to that. Usually, of course, we do our show on Tuesday. But on the holiday week, with Christmas coming up, we're doing it here off-site in the garage, home of the Throwback Podcast. And boys, first of all, have you enjoyed the experience, you know, watching the game from the garage? Let's start there.
I think it's been amazing because, you know, there is a celebratory Christmas kind of vibe to it. Your sons, Jack and Harrison, strolled in here.
They're all fired up. Your lovely wife, Emily,
your parents is here. Dad, you know, Dan's dad is here. That's a special event. And getting to sit and watch 3 hours of football and hearing what I would consider decades worth of precise hammer dropping prose and commentary from Dan's dad is a special experience.
I've been here for a baseball playoff game as well, and it reminds me of, you know, a few years back, it got to be trendy for all these bars, you know, in urban areas to have garage fronts that actually pull down, you know, and about 5 minutes into the game, Dan puts the garage door down. It feels like you're in an actual bar and you're just having a good time. It was a good setting.
No, Dan did an amazing job setting up this garage. It's changed quite a bit in the last few years. It's a beautiful place to watch
a game. Process.
And who better to sit next to than Keith Hansis, like I was all night. A lot of hot takes on Aaron Rodgers. We'll maybe have that a little later. He tried to stump Wes in some trivia, and Wes did a pretty good job answering the bell.
What was the trivia question again, Dad?
The trivia question, first of all, was what was the longest punt in NFL history?
We whiffed on that one.
Well, I attempted Randall Cunningham, but the answer was not that.
And what was the other one?
The answer to that was Steve O'Neill of the Jets, 98 yards.
And then the other one was, and this was the real hammer dropper.
The other one was back. Who had the most rushing yards for the season? Way back in the early 70s.
Yeah. Who had the record before Michael Vick?
Before Michael Vick.
And I said Bobby Douglas, but then Keith, a bit of a stickler, said what year and how many yards? I said 71 or 72. He nailed me down on that one, so I had to go with 71. It was 72. 1972, and I guess 961 yards, but it was 968 rushing yards.
So you got the answer incorrect.
Yeah, I was wrong. 0 for 2.
Yeah, I was
close,
I was
but not, you know.
So we're going to, and we got together here and had some Mexican food and enjoyed ourselves and watched the Monday Night Football game. We're going to get to that in just a little bit. We're also going to do some news, get caught up on some happenings after week 16, and including the apparent return of one of the most, perhaps, I don't know, Mount Rushmore, this thing, most famous NFL players of the 21st century. Stick a pin in that. Because I think this gentleman for the with the Seattle Seahawks might qualify. Anyway, that's a discussion to have in a little bit. But let's start, yes, with Monday Night Football. The Green Bay Packers are celebrating.
Jones, look at that balance. Jones, see ya! Only so much you could ask of this defense. And Aaron Jones just asked far too much of them. 56-yard touchdown.
Aaron Jones, 56 yards to the house. And that was the dagger for the Packers, who absolutely overwhelmed defensively the Vikings in a 23-10 win that gives the Packers their 12th win and the NFC North title, and for the time being puts them Greg, I think I'm right on the computation here. They have a bye as of right now. They're in the top two, right behind the Niners, right?
All they have to do is beat the Blauhards in Detroit, David Blau and the Lions, next week to clinch a bye, and they could even move up to the one seed.
I like their chances.
If the 49ers lose.
I would say don't just assume that's happening, but the chances feel good.
So let's talk about this game a little bit, because the Packers certainly did not blow the doors off the Vikings. Aaron Rodgers and company, they struggled for large portions of this game on offense against a good Vikings team and a very difficult place to play. But I think the story of this game really will be what a massive egg the Vikings laid. And Wes, we'll start with you. I know you and I have had our disagreements with Kirk Cousins and the Vikings and where blame should be assessed when the Vikings go wrong. And this does not make me the winner of that argument.
No, because you were right. Everything that you said, it was all right. Dan is declared the winner.
No, that is not true, because a lot of people didn't show up in this game, but certainly not Kirk Cousins either. 7 first downs for Minnesota in 4 quarters, the fewest in a home game by this organization since 1971. Keith Hanzus was a junior at Clarkstown High School at that time.
Oh, senior.
Senior at Clarkstown High. The man's a grandfather. Wes, speak to it. Come on, Kirk Cousins. Put the team on your back when they need you.
Well, like I said on Thursday, you and I see more eye to eye on this than it seems like. I don't care what his record is on Monday Night Football. That is immaterial. It, like, somehow Monday night games are better than Sunday games. That might have been true in 1983. I don't think that's been true lately. Thirdly, we've seen this before. He didn't come up when the Redskins needed a late season victory. He didn't come up big when the Vikings of 2018 needed a late season victory. And he didn't come up big tonight. And like you said, the blame can be assessed to a running game that didn't exist, an offensive line that got worked over by the Packers front 7, a defense that got some turnovers but also allowed 150 yards to Aaron Jones, a coach who punted down 13 with 4 minutes left in the game. There's a lot of blame to go around, but you cannot escape that Kirk Cousins led an offense that had 7 first downs. And like you said, since 1971 was the last time that happened in a Vikings home game. Well, this is one of the most disappointing performances any team has had all year.
I mean, it's the worst offensive performance. You can't write how embarrassing this is. The only team to have fewer first downs in a game this season, also on Monday Night Football. Here's a little trivia. Come on and guess it.
I'd say Chicago Bears.
You got to be able to guess it, Jets fans in the room. It was the Jets versus the Patriots. That's the only game.
I have removed that from frontal lobotomy like the Kennedy kid.
They had like a third string accountant playing quarterback the Jets that night, so I'm not sure that.
The difference is this is for the NFC North title, and you come in the Packers defense and Mike Pettine and especially Za'Darius Smith and everyone on that defense deserves all the credit in the world for totally dominating. But to score 10 points because you had a 3-and-out inside the 10-yard line and because Kirk Cousins made one nice pass, it was a 26-yard drive where he had the throw for the touchdown, that's how you got your 10 points. You had 13 drives. None of them went over 31 yards. You can't put any blame on the defense. The defense played great. They gave them the ball 3 extra times tonight, including giving them 2 scoring chances, and they only allowed 23 points. That's an A-minus from your defense, who's been around for a long time and kept getting put in bad positions. This was the most embarrassing offensive performance any team's had all season.
Let me go through it here. This is the Vikings' possessions. After recovering a fumble right off the bat by the Packers, 4 plays, 5 yards. 6 plays, 18 yards. 3 plays, negative 2 yards. 3 plays, 26 yards. 3 plays, 5 yards. 4 plays, 6 yards. 3 plays, 5 yards. 3 plays, 7 yards. 6 plays, 31 yards.
That's
interception.
A pick.
5 plays, 20 yards. 3 plays, negative 4 yards. 7 plays, 12 yards. And finally, 4 plays, negative 5 yards. I mean, Mark, this is outrageous.
And that's why I think we were even saying to each other at the midway point that the Green Bay's 3 turnovers early, that, you know, you see these in games. The Minnesota did nothing with that. They were unable to do anything with that, and you felt that Green Bay would find a way to come back. And my favorite moment of the night was when Packers coach Matt LaFleur was described by Keith Hanzus as a little kid with a beard. And yet somehow, somehow the coach and Aaron Rodgers have gotten this far. And I have no questions. I have no problem with the Vikings being pushed down to where they belong at the sixth seed, because they're an inferior team to Green Bay, but also to every single other team in the NFC race, because I don't trust them on the road. I don't trust them at home. They are flawed. Guys like Adam Thielen are not healthy. Without Dalvin Cook, I think that's a huge... I think we talked about with or without Dalvin Cook, they'll be fine. I simply don't agree, because you need his presence.
Well, I didn't think it would make a big difference.
His presence has mattered for them.
Game, it wouldn't have made that big of a difference.
Maybe not tonight, but when we've looked at their offense and believed in their abilities, little things like tonight, attempting a trick play and having to go into the trick play bag because they simply couldn't get basic plays done, and you have Kirk Cousins rolling out and dropping an overthrown pass, and he had a bit bad
Wait,
pick
that
himself.
Was not a drop.
Well, no, he stretched out for it, of course.
If Dig puts that on him, they have first and ten at the 15-yard
All I'd say
line.
Is that you can kind of tell sometimes in a game early that a team's going to get into a flow, and they just never found that way into this game at home. I think it's very concerning for them. I see them as a one and done team in the playoffs.
It was hard to see this game coming, though. I mean, they were a top eight offense in efficiency, according to Football Outsiders, coming into this. They've been top 10 in offense and defense in points. Like, I thought they actually pass protected pretty well coming into this night, and especially in the fourth quarter. I think Zadarius Smith, he's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but he would be my top five. I've been putting him in my top five all year, and this was one of the best games any defensive player's had all year. 3.5 sacks, 5 tackles for loss.
Well, you've been saying that you like him for a Defensive Player of the Year candidate because he makes a play or a big play every week. He's sort of the NFC's version of TJ Watt this year, and you saw it tonight. 5 QB hits, 5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. That's one of the best defensive games we've seen.
It's weird because their defense, the Packers, started the season playing so well. That was what Aaron Rodgers said coming off the field in week one. We've got a defense. We've got a defense. And then they went away for 2 months. But here they are in December, and the Packers' offense isn't consistent, and they weren't tonight. But they still have Aaron Jones, and they still have Davante Adams, and they still have Aaron Rodgers. Like, they have enough offense when the defense is playing like this.
They've allowed about 12.5 points per game over the last month. This was the first really good offense they've shut down. The Vikings are among the best big play offenses in the NFL before this game. Do you see them as maybe like the AFC's version of the Chiefs, considering they have Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Davante Adams, and then a defense that has been improving for the past month?
I think I'm with Mark, because Mark, you were getting agitated watching this game. You don't like either of these teams. You don't view either team. Don't back off
as a
serious Super Bowl threat.
No.
And I don't necessarily disagree with you, because it does feel like the Packers, despite the 12-3 record, they feel like a step below, which I don't think about the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are a team that can absolutely make major noise all the way to Miami, potentially, if things break the right way.
I think both things can be true, though. I think they are a step below the Saints and the 49ers, and that if they get the one seed and they're going to get the two seed, can Mike Pettin and them win a home game?
But that's a very Greg
teams?
Answer because
but it's true,
I, but
though,
it is
I can
true.
See them in
it's
the Super
that,
Bowl.
It's true that
this
a lot of things can happen on our planet, but I like in terms of when we're really where does our belief fall? The Green Bay tonight was a couple bad plays from losing this game also, because their offense was defunct for 2+ quarters.
They still moved the ball through. I just think they dominated the game. I mean, they had 383 yards. There was a couple nice defensive plays where you knocked the ball out of Aaron Jones' Davante Adams' hand. But ultimately, they did what they needed to do. They came in there and they embarrassed their
I mean, they didn't dominate the first half where they have 3 turnovers and are doing nothing on offense and putting up field goals. But I hear you that, like, there's no question that they are the better team of this situation. But I struggle with them as a second seed when I have the Saints and the Niners out there in that field.
Could be number one. And, I mean, Seattle beating San Francisco next week is not that crazy.
And Wes, you know, we did go at it a little bit on Cousins, but this kills him. I mean, this is...
I totally agree.
The point you're making that people get too hung up on where he stands when the team fails, whatever the viewpoint is, this, whatever people thought, and the majority of people who view him as a guy that comes up small when it matters and when the spotlight's on, to average less than 4 yards an attempt. And if you also factor in going into this game, if you do believe Cousins is a guy that does come up small, when you saw that Dalvin Cook was out and then you saw that Madison was out, it was very clear at that point that Cousins was going to need to do what Carson Wentz has done, quite frankly, in Philadelphia these last few weeks, which is put the team on his back. And I guess, I mean, there's just so much evidence. And I know your argument's never been like, well, he can do it, he just hasn't done it yet. That the evidence is there that that's, he's just never going to be that guy. And maybe that all changes next month. But this just continues to hammer home that legacy that in prime time against good teams, he will come up small, because he is one of the people who did come up small for the Vikings tonight. Absolutely.
Well, your argument has been that he's a statistical monster who comes up small. And I've got no problem with that. My defense of him has been about shoehorning that argument into the conversation. He is not a quarterback like Jameis Winston, where he leaves his fingerprints all over every game. Some games he's not needed to be the story, and he still ends up being the story. So that's where my defense of him comes
in. And I think that's where you guys are closer to agreement, is he can't lift the team by himself.
He can't.
And I think that's,
and I think the coaching staff is, you know, is part of it. Kevin Stefanski, it's like that, whatever their plan was, it clearly didn't work. Mike Pettine had him dialed up, and Kenny Clark and especially Za'Darius Smith, you know, busted them
open. Seem
like, and
Adam Minnesota's Thielen, number.
And Adam
like
Thielen isn't
games.
Adam Thielen. I mean, he had four targets tonight, and he didn't have a catch. And so suddenly you're down Thielen. He's on the field, but it's not really Thielen, and you're down Cook, and it is a different
thing. I'd say this also. Yeah. I don't feel like Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers on any level at this point. He does not seem like the same guy to me right now.
He didn't throw a touchdown tonight.
Well, they lost the Davante Adams touchdown that he threw behind him, and there was a similar play where he threw behind Aaron Jones on a big third down early. Those are supposed to be easy passes.
And speaking of Aaron Jones, I don't even know how the Pro Bowl is voted. I think fans do it on Twitter by hitting retweet or something. But come on now. Aaron
Players,
Jones.
Coaches, and fans all have a contribution.
All right, cool.
If
but
it's
Aaron
even
Jones,
that scientific.
23 carries, 154 yards, 2 touchdowns in a money game, and he's been doing it all year. He leads the league in touchdowns, and I know Zeke statistically has had a nice season, but if you've been watching these games, you know that Aaron Jones has been a, kind of a bigger figure in the NFL than Zeke this year, and he deserves to be. He gets the gift of going to Orlando if I make the decision, but I do not make the decision.
I think some of these players are happy not to go. Orlando is a somewhat okay city, but some are fine.
He might be coming with us to Miami. He's only got to win 2 games, maybe 2 home games.
The garage is unanimous in the opinion that it should be Aaron Jones over Zeke.
That is.
Any other final thoughts on this game before we do some news? All right, I'll take that. Dad, do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, yeah, you were a little critical, Mr. Hansis, Keith, can I call you, about Aaron Rodgers early. You had a particular theory
about how
he interacts with his team.
Yeah, well, my feeling with Aaron Rodgers is that, you know, when things are going good, you know, he's Mr. Good Guy. But when things are not going so good, he is certainly not the same guy that you see on the sidelines that's frowning at people and looking the other way.
He's a man that lays blame on others.
That's right. And also the way he handled the coach last year, not listening to the play calls.
Mike McCarthy.
And Mike McCarthy, and treating him terribly, shows me that I just don't think he's the kind of man that, you know, that everyone talks about.
And so, some would say that you have, like, Zapruder-level film evidence of that on the sideline over many games. So I think that's fair.
Let me tell you, he's a great quarterback. I will say that. There's no question about that, but that's my attitude about him.
That's a hot take, and I like it. Keith answers with a take.
Keith is right, but this feels like one of those seasons where things are going right. You know, I mean, they've had a lot of luck this season. They're 12-3 without, you know, looking like a great team. They're very likely going to be hosting a game in the divisional round.
Said it, Craig. They don't have a fleet of signature wins.
No.
But they have swept. They're 5-0 But they're 5-0 in the division. And what more can you ask from Matt LaFleur in year one?
They don't have that body of resume, but it's not like voting to get you in. They're just going to be hosting a game in Lambeau, and the winner of that game is going to be playing in the NFC.
And it's going to be like 1 degree and like an 88 wind chill. So
they have a defense that's hot. And a quarterback, you know, can get hot at a moment's notice and drop a game-winning throw like the one he made to Jared Cook. He can do that at a moment's notice.
They got enough weapons. Adams, Jones, they got enough weapons. Protection.
What happens when the Bohemians Bohemian culture and the Blauharts come in and spoil this little party, Dan.
Ooh, that would be outrageous. I would not put anything by Bohemian culture and the Blauharts. All right. That's going on that game. Now let's get into some news.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
All right. Let's start with some interview, head coach interview heat. Mike McCarthy, who, yes, as Keith Hansis mentioned, got basically railroaded by Aaron Rodgers down the stretch of that run in Green Bay. He has sat out of football for a year, and now he is looking to get back in the game, and he interviewed with the Carolina Panthers. Mike Garofalo reported that. What's everybody laughing about?
Just that he was railroaded out of town.
This is becoming
this
a very
spicy.
Anti-Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
it's
got very spicy.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, to be fair, Keith, I mean, let's freshen up those Mike McCarthy playbooks, shall we? I mean, that was one of the most boring, predictable offense I've ever seen, one of the great quarterbacks of all time. And I had been calling for him to be out of town for 3 or 4 years, so I was on Aaron Rodgers' side there.
All right. Very predictable. Very predictable. Anyway, Mike Garofalo reported that the Panthers interviewed Mike McCarthy after Carolina's loss to the Colts on Sunday. McCarthy, of course, fired by the Packers near the end of last season. He spent 2019 out of football. And of course, you know, the best thing he could have done, and this has been all very calculated by McCarthy and the people that he works with, was kind of lay low, let the resume kind of simmer on the back burner. And then when teams start firing head coaches at the end of the year, put that resume out there, and all of a sudden 125-77 in 13 seasons and 10 wins in the playoffs and a Super Bowl title, all of a sudden he looks like a better coach option than maybe he did last year. And the Panthers, because they dumped Ron Rivera, they have a bit of a head start on some of these other teams that will fire coaches. Does this feel like a fit, Wes? I know you're not that high on McCarthy either.
Well, I'm just like, I haven't seen a PR campaign this savvy since James Carville was running Clinton. I mean,
wow.
Whatever McCarthy does, if he sneezes, we got reporters reporting on it breathlessly. I don't like, to me, he's a little stale, and I'm not really that interested in where he's interviewing. That's just my opinion.
The one thing I'd say is that he probably represents two owners looking for interviews. A secure veteran coach, which there are only a few of out there right now. And, you know, when I think of Mike Pettine, I did a piece a while back called The Sojourn Year, where coaches that vanish for a season, and what do they do with that year? And Pettine talked about the fact that he felt that his own game planning and view of the game had become a bit narrow, and that he took that year to examine, the same way that we would, every single team and offenses and defenses around the league, and he grew, and Pettine's come back and reshaped his career from it. So can Mike McCarthy do that intellectually and as a coach? I don't know, but I understand why owners would be attracted to someone with his track record.
He wanted back in right away. There wasn't a ton of interest, you know, a year ago. He'll get interviews. I don't know if I, you know, would guess that he's going to get a job. I mean, I don't think that's guaranteed, and I don't think the Panthers are necessarily a big fit, especially if you're keeping Cam Newton. But why wouldn't you interview him right now? You have time to kill. You're David Tepper. Like, interview.
Isn't that why you got rid of Rivera early?
You should interview as many people as possible, right. And he makes sense to interview. But I guess I'd be surprised if he got one of the better jobs available.
I think he'll get a job. I know Ron Rivera is going to get a job. I think McCarthy will too. I'd be very surprised if he didn't, quite frankly. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be reading it wrong. But I think there's going to be an owner that's going to buy into, like I said, that back burner warmed up resume. And it's going to be something that sways them. And they're like, oh, we want somebody that knows what they're doing. Your Cleveland Browns, Mark. Again,
they are
as we
a
brought
team
this
I could
up.
See.
But we want a professional in here that knows what he's doing, that has experience, that the players will respect. Whether they actually do or not is a different conversation.
Right. They had ties to him, and they're one of the teams that didn't even go out of the way to interview him. I think that if you're a fan that's sort of, you know, toiled with a struggling team for a really long time, and the other side of the PR thing with Mike McCarthy leaving Green Bay was so evil and so, like, unfriendly towards him, that I'd be concerned as a fan just rolling Mike McCarthy in as head coach and wondering what will be different than what everyone was saying about at the end of his Packers run.
When you're buying Riverboat, you're buying his leadership and the way all his players go to bat for him and love him. When you're buying Mike McCarthy, you're buying his offense. And what's to say for his offense over the last couple of years?
Well, he does have that street named after him, Mike McCarthy Way. So,
and you know I got it? He's got a ring.
He's got a ring.
That carries weight is all I'm saying. With not saying he's a good coach.
With the six-seeded Packers team, no one saw it coming.
It was a long time ago. That should be said as well. All right. In other news, yes, that Mount Rushmore. Let's get back to that. Is Marshawn Lynch on the Mount Rushmore of the most popular NFL players of the last 20 years?
No. Oh, I think popularity.
Well,
yeah,
if
I think
you change it from famous to popular, he's in the mix. But I would still say no.
I mean, to me, when I think of the last 10 years at least, he's someone who has more memories attached to him than almost like 95% of other players.
Well, guess what, Mark? More memories are coming because the running back and the Seattle Seahawks agreed to a deal on Monday. Lynch's agent announced Lynch's contract is for this season only, which means week 17 against the Niners and the playoffs. The Seahawks also signed Robert Turbin. Another old war horse for them. He spent the first three NFL seasons.
M-Rob is coming back from the NFL Network studios.
Kristen Michaels in the building.
Sean Alexander.
Sean Alexander, the 2006 MVP is back. No.
The original Kurt Warner.
But the original Kurt Warner. Lynch and Turbin fill backfield spots that opened Sunday when Chris Carson and CJ Procise both went down with season-ending injuries. We talked about, Mark, on Sunday night show, that nobody had a worse Sunday than the Seahawks. And let's not act like this is a prime Marshawn Lynch coming into town to save the day. But you know what? There's a little bit of juice to it. There's a little bit of fun. And, you know, a dollop of a sprinkle of Christmas happiness on an otherwise grim scenario for Seattle.
I mean, I can easily fall in love with the concept and the narrative of the whole thing. There, you know, from another angle, when I was in Oakland last week covering the last Raiders game, he was also there doing apparently shots with fans. So I don't know where the football shape is. It also, Wes, you know, right in the middle of Super Bowl 50, Wes was ordered to write the Marshawn Lynch retirement story when he hung his cleats and took a photo. And now I think that Wes is going to have to go into our CMS system probably tonight.
Right.
And update that story and add some new graphs, please, Wes.
Let me put that another way. I wrote this man's retirement story before I had cancer. That's how long ago it was.
My concern, speaking of Wes, my concern, Marshawn Lynch, who maybe he's been a gym rat the last 8 months or whatever since he retired, but that he is a guy that is in danger of sustaining the worst hamstring injury since Chris Wessling rounding second for the Shield in the 2017 season.
Snipered.
I mean, where the hamstring actually jumps off the bone and screams in agony.
Snapped like a dry twig.
We don't want that to happen. But in seriousness, the idea that you're going to have Lynch contributing, you take him out of retirement and pluck him into basically a playoff scenario in week 17 and then January. I wonder how much work he'll actually get in this offense.
You figure he would split the reps with Travis Homer, who was there, who was their fourth string back, and then Turbin. You're probably not giving him 20 carries, but it's amazing. I applaud Pete Carroll for the theatricality of it, for the showmanship.
Yes, absolutely.
Of it.
Yes.
Is this the time for that? I don't know.
I think it is.
It's fun, but
you just had the worst loss.
What's your alternative?
You had the worst loss that you could possibly have. This is going to give juice to the locker room, and not that that's going to make them win or not, but it's like, what? Why not? The worst running back that they could just sign off the street that's like the next guy up is not going to be better than the 15% chance that maybe Lynch just does something great. He did run pretty well with the Raiders. I thought he did. We gave him a little credit that he was running pretty well before he got
hurt. Isn't there another universe that we live in where he's suddenly, a week from now, having rumbled for 148 yards, two touchdowns?
No.
Well, I believe in that world.
Maybe like a 7-yard touchdown. He goes 3 for 16 with a 7-yard touchdown, and he just becomes a factor.
Well,
and
that'll
it's fun.
Do it.
And you know what? They're not my team. I'm not working for them. Like, he's giving it to the rest of the football fans just as a nice fun story.
This is like something an ABA team would do to like
spike
the attendance numbers. But they're trying to win the Super Bowl here.
But what? Look, guess how much?
I'm not against it. I want everyone to temper expectations.
What are the other options?
What does Travis Homer weigh?
174 pounds.
202 pounds. Pete Carroll has a formula, and he has talked about this. He talked about this over the summer. When our team wasn't doing well, it was because we didn't have a power running game. We did not support our quarterback, and our formula for playing is defense, power running, and support the quarterback. their offensive line isn't built to protect Russell Wilson. It's built to open lanes for power runners. And I don't know if Travis Homer is that guy, but
like, you know, there's a number three overall pick that is several years younger available. Power.
Trent Richardson?
Trent Richardson.
Well, what is
still
he weighing right now?
Still trying to get off the elevator before the door closes.
Here's my point, though.
He's 3.3 yards per carry career, but he led the AAF in touchdowns just last year.
All right, here are the last three running backs that have been signed off of waivers or a practice squad. Samaje Perine, Kenneth Dixon, and it doesn't even matter. Rod Smith. Mm. So is there like a 15% chance that Marshawn Lynch is way better than those guys?
Yes.
I think there is.
Absolutely.
So it's like, why not?
I agree. I'm just saying, everybody, don't expect a beast quake.
I'm expecting it.
It's more likely there'll be a cart coming for the man. That's all.
You cannot shake Mark's expectations.
I am excited about this. This is one of the better things that's happened in a terrible week of football for some people.
And he's going to be on Sunday Night Football against the 49ers.
That's cool.
That's delicious.
I would need to go through it, but this feels like the best season finale for Al and Chris since they started this game. I can't remember a better one than Seahawks 49ers.
Moving on, the Ravens clinched everything on Sunday. They are the number one seed in the AFC. And as expected, Lamar Jackson and several other starters will not be playing against the Steelers in Week 17. Jackson, of course, Mark Ingram, who, by the way, has a strained calf, which, by the way, is actually, you know, technically a torn calf muscle. And he left the stadium in a boot yesterday. And with this week off and then the bye, he gets extended time to rest and recover and rehab. But we'll see whether he's Mark Ingram come playoff time for the Ravens. But this obviously makes a lot of sense. And then on the flip side of that, you have Bill O'Brien of the Houston Texans, who, despite the fact that the Texans can't move really much at all, they are at the 4 seed in the AFC. They could get up to the 3 seed. He is going to play his guys anyway. That feels Belichickian from The Disciple, Greg.
He did it last year.
Well, who did it last year?
Bill O'Brien played his guys last year when he didn't have to, and I still don't believe him this year. I believe that he's going to enter the first quarter with the starting lineup out there, and depending on what happens in the early games, he's going to adjust. But Deshaun Watson was limping last game.
Grabbing at that ankle repeatedly.
Will Fuller has a,
well, he's
a
out.
Groin pull.
He's,
right. So
Ian says that Will Fuller is likely out 3 weeks.
So my point,
basically the
my
season.
Point is, your receiving core is already shallow. You're going to risk an injury to either Stills or Hopkins? No, I don't believe that's going to happen for 4 quarters.
Yeah, the quotes weren't as aggressive when you look. They weren't as definitive as I think people made them out to be. Aaron Wilson, who covers them every day, pointed out them playing to win still might mean them sitting some selective starters. The Chiefs game, you know, is the early window, so they will know whether they can move up to the 3 seed. It's debatable whether they would even care that much about moving up to the 3 seed or not. But yeah, the Chiefs would have to lose to the Chargers, which is unlikely anyways. I just don't think I have a big problem with doing it either way. Everyone thinks it's crazy to play your starters or to try to play to win or play most of them. And to me, there's only 16 of them, and he doesn't think his team is playing that well right now. And there's, you know, one way to get better at playing football as a team is to play football as a team. Like, it just doesn't feel crazy to me if he went that route.
I'm with you 100%. And I think that we, you know, when we're looking at these teams week to week from a distance, and yeah, we're weighing the risk of losing, you know, a key player. But when you're a coach running a locker room and you have a team that is somewhat underperformed in the Texans, where they've been up and down, I think there's some value to saying, I'm not giving you a week off. I want to go see, at least for part of this game, go out there, practice and perform, and show me that you're a playoff team.
DeAndre Hopkins hurts his shoulder.
Of course,
but you played 15 games before that. It's right. Just like you can't.
He's getting it
life.
Both ways. He's got the media reporting back to his team. We're going for it this week. So he's got his team riled up,
right.
And they're
the
all going for it.
Ready.
And then in the first quarter, he's going
to
pull them.
Can I make one last point on this? Is that I actually think it is a pretty big deal. Getting that 3 seed, because if you get the 3, you might get the Oakland Raiders in your building in the first round of the
Come
playoffs.
On now.
Or Duck Hodges and the Steelers, who might be on fumes at this point. Duck Hodges on the road,
you
in
might
a
get the Titans
game.
Again, which would or no, you could beat the Titans in theory and then get them again. That's a possibility. Which
could
would
get
be
the
weird.
Titans again. Whereas, you know, the four seed is going to get the Bills, right? And
yes.
Bills are going to be a tough out. I don't know, you know, if they're a Super Bowl team, but I think that's a team that's destined to play
a
close
a
game
difference.
On wild card weekend.
That's a huge difference.
All right. Let's see. Anything else?
I also think the Ravens backups can absolutely beat the Steelers. You can only sit so many people, and it, I don't know if RG3 is a better quarterback than Duck Hodges. I think he is.
You think the backup offensive line can block TJ Watt
well,
and Bud Dupree?
That's the thing.
And
they only
guys?
Have eight or nine offensive linemen. So Yanda's sitting. Harbaugh pointed out, like, you can't. There's only so many people you can sit. And you're still going to be like cooking
I don't think
up
Ronnie
steam.
Stanley's going to be out there for four quarters.
That's fair.
Finally in the news, Philip Rivers, who is 38 years old now. He just turned 38. He's in the final year of his contract. It's been a tough go with the Chargers and a lot of speculation that the Chargers will move on from their quarterback after this season. And I thought it was pretty interesting after a 24-17 loss. Reporters, you know, asked Rivers about his future, and he was quite open about it and, quite frankly, blunt in his assessment of himself and his future. Let's listen to that.
But am I capable of it physically and mentally? There's no question.
Do you want to?
Yes, I do. I want to play football. Yep. I say, yes, I want to play football, and I do. And that's what I feel deep down as I stand right here.
Wes, so Rivers, he's coming back in 2020 because somebody, if not the Chargers, is going to sign him. Do you think it's a fresh start on the way? And if you do think it's a fresh start, where's a good landing spot for Mr. Rivers?
It's interesting. You said the assumption, you know, a lot of people assume the cognoscenti assumes the Chargers want to move on. I think there's also some people who assumed before this that Rivers might just he and Eli go out together and call it a career because he doesn't want to play for anyone else. I could definitely see him moving back towards the Southeast where he's from, where his kids are going to start high school in a couple of years, where he wants to coach. I think Tannehill has made the Titans probably an unlikely scenario, but the Carolina Panthers, who are said to be wanting to move on from Cam Newton, he played college at NC State there, so that makes sense to me. I could see that, but I could also see the Chargers, even if their head coach is done with him, their GM saying, well, you want to put the franchise tag on him and see if anybody will trade for him.
I got one for you. What about Jake Brisket struggling down the stretch with the Colts, putting Phil Rivers in Indy with Frank Reich and
very
getting one
intriguing.
Last run? That I feel like that could work, right?
Nice Midwestern town for his family.
I hadn't like thought that. Of that, but I like it.
There's some juice there. And
good offensive line.
There is some talk of, yeah, good offensive line, obviously a great offensive coach. They maybe give T.Y. Hilton some help there. They get healthy, obviously. They have Marlon Mack. Maybe that's a good spot.
Spent some time together, I believe, with the Chargers.
Yes, they did.
Yep. Ooh. I would say this, too.
Like
you're not going to get it. You're not going to get any quarterback, you know, heading into Week 17 telling people when he's got to go start in 5 or 6 days, I'm done with football. I'm not there mentally. Like, athletes don't
right,
operate
but
that way.
The way he talked about it and sort of the typical Philip Rivers defiance, you could just tell he's playing. I mean, he said,
well, the Chargers aren't going to dictate when he retires. Let's
right.
put it that way.
He said, like, there's a natural human nature. You're 38. You've thrown some bad interceptions for you to think about whether you can make these throws. And he said, none of that's true. I've made as many great throws this year, whether he's right or wrong. He believes that as I made earlier in my career, I've made some throws that are better than ever. And he is insulted by the suggestion that he's done, and whether the Chargers agree or not, I don't know. There's a weird situation. I think with, you know, Tyrod Taylor is signed there next year. Anthony Lynn's been with them before. And so
good luck with that, Chargers.
Right, at least that they have someone where they could
open
move
up SoFi
on.
Stadium with Tyrod Taylor
and
good
a
luck.
Rookie and a rookie maybe you draft someone.
Yep. All right. Let's see, Dad. What's going on? You're chewing that ice over there. It's very loud.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, he's been waiting for our segment, which we've done a lot of. It's our top 100 games of the 1970s from 1975 to 1985. We're each going to do 20 each. Take a 2 or 3 minutes for each game. Wes, let's get us going.
Well, the Holy Roller.
Dad, I want your thoughts, if you could, on Philip Rivers. You were chewing the tape with me a little bit today. We were watching Game Pass as well as I'm putting together the power rankings. Would you want Philip Rivers if you were the Colts or a coach that needed a little upgrade, or do you think he's shot?
No, I think Rivers still has it, and I think he would be a good addition to the Colts. The Colts look, if they had anybody, if they had a better quarterback, I think they would have definitely had 9 or 10 wins this year. So, you know, I think he would be a great addition. I think his time in San Diego was over.
And should Adam Gase be back with the Jets?
I don't know. Gase, I don't particularly like Gase. as you know, I'm a big Jet fan, as you are, Dan. And, yep. You know what? I don't particularly like him, but I have to say, you know, they were 1-7, and now they're 6-9. So I'm have to be pretty pleased.
They haven't quit on him.
They haven't quit, and seems like he's got the team behind him, but I've also heard some rumblings in the locker room about him not being so popular with the team, but that happens with
fake
coaches.
Tough guy, I believe, was the report in Bleacher Report that Greg Williams, the locker room respects, but Gase, a bit of an act. But you know what?
That also feels like that could have come straight from Greg Williams' camp and lawyers. And
or just Greg
agents.
Williams.
Yeah.
You know, like he just called up. He did the conference call and said that.
You know what was just disclosed there?
What?
Keith has a guest pass to the lab, and Mark can't even get in the door.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's absurd.
That's true.
You know, there's so many situations that are untoward here.
Access.
So.
Should we give
ocular access.
Aaron Rodgers, Keith's boy, the final word tonight after tonight's win? He said, "It's great to win in the stadium after I was jeered a couple years ago, leaving the field with a broken collarbone." Yeah, he stuck it to him.
Well, you know what? Coming. Just like Phil Rivers, these great old quarterbacks, you know, they use slights as motivation. And sure enough, that's what happened tonight in Minneapolis.
I mean, if I got booed after breaking my collarbone, that would stick with me too.
Yeah, better than getting cheered for a broken collarbone, right? All right, we will be back on Thursday with our Week 17 preview. Mark, you got to be feeling it right now. Week 17 preview show coming up.
I like checkpoints, and that is a checkpoint where we take 20 teams.
Yes.
And we're all in this giant clown car.
Yep.
We just we open those back door of the car, and we just shove 20 teams to the side of the highway, and we keep rolling.
I think of it as like
catching
them.
A good way to describe it.
All like in a tuna net, and then just like in a Superman way, three times around the head, and then fly them into the sun.
I like that.
They're
too.
Gone.
20 of them.
Anyway, so check that out when it comes. Again, tickets available at the miamiimprov.com/events. If you want to check out our live show on the Thursday before the Super Bowl, that's going to be a lot of fun. And finally, tomorrow is Christmas Eve, Christmas on Wednesday. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. Greg, I believe Hanukkah is rolling now.
I believe so.
We are right in the thing.
What's
of Hanukkah
going on? Because your family's
Greg.
In Japan. Is the menorah out? Like, take us through. What's
going
on?
Well, we've never. We're not really a religious household in any way. We've never celebrated Hanukkah. I mean, I didn't as a kid either. But we celebrated our Christmas before they left.
Oh, very good.
Rosenthal Christmas. My parents flew in, we did
that's
that
nice.
Early. New Year's is the big holiday in Tokyo, so that's really why
that's better
there.
Put than Dan on the last show asking what the hook of Hanukkah was, as if it's not been around for
the candles are the hook.
And it's rolling right now.
And yes, I'm lucky enough to have my dad Keith here and my mom celebrating it, so we're very fortunate. And yes, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everyone. We will be back Thursday. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for. See, it's a different desk setup, so I gotta say, Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Keith Hansis, Clarkstown High, class of 71.
Yes.
Yes. Until Thursday.